On this episode of The Edge podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Susie Dietrich, principal owner of Top Staffing, Alltech Staffing and Resource Group, eStaff Consulting Group, Account Staff, Sterling Office Professionals, and TVS. Susie shares how her mom was her link into the staffing industry, why she chose to have six different company brands instead of one umbrella brand, her philosophy on equality as it relates to hiring, why she doesn't have a LinkedIn, and so much more. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, and I am the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. Welcome to our podcast, The Edge, where today I am with Susie Dietrich. She is the principal owner of Top Staffing, Alltech Staffing and Resource Group, eStaff Consulting Group, Account Staff, Sterling Office Professionals, and TVS. You are a second-generation staffing industry entrepreneur and have a very interesting story to how you got your start in the industry, Susie. First of all, thank you for joining us. And that was a mouthful. You've got a lot of companies, and I can't wait to hear more about them today. The start in our industry, it began with your mom. So
it did.
Which I love when I met you and you were giving me your background, and it's something that I'm very personally passionate about with generations of being in business together. So I was hoping, Susie, if you don't mind, maybe we can start there. Start off by hearing your story.
Oh, well, then my story starts with my mom, which is great. So I went to Penn State, and I busted my rear end to get 2 degrees in 4 years, thinking that I wanted to be an equity side analyst. I got a degree in economics and a degree in finance, and I thought, hey, that'd be the way to go. Well, in the meantime, my mom, who, by the way, had stayed home with us for 16 years, all through my high school, right? She was a stay-at-home mom. Well, my family fell onto some hard times, moved back to Pittsburgh, and my mom had to go back to work. She didn't have a choice. And she had started her career as a secretary, which is the funniest part, because she was my dad's secretary. Well, back then you could hit on your secretaries, and he did. So they ended up married with 3 kids. So when she had to go back to work, when we fell on hard times, she did. And she was making, ready for this, $3.85 an hour, and she was what a lot of us in the industry remember as the Kelly girl. So she went to Monroeville, Pennsylvania, went and interviewed with the Monroeville office. A staffing coordinator said, hey, you sound great. Can you come in and be our receptionist? Because next week, our receptionist here in our office is going to be on vacation. Well, she worked as the Kelly Services receptionist for that week, temp assignment. She went on a handful of other assignments for them, and eventually they said, hey, come be a staffing coordinator for us. But within 5 years, my mom was the regional manager here in the area and was opening and closing offices. For those of us who are a little on the older side, we'll remember that many years ago, Kelly Services went through a recombination of their franchisees, and they went back and they bought all their franchises back. My mom didn't want to work for corporate. She really liked the franchisee she was working for. So she sat out her non-compete for the year and in 1987 opened up Top Staffing, which proudly is my largest and oldest brand. It was started in 1987 by her. At the time, I was still in high school. So when I got out of high school and went to college and knew exactly what I wanted to do with this, you know, with my life, which ended up being completely opposite and on its ear. I got out of school. I did real well in school. I was very academic by nature and then graduated on a Saturday, started my job at Shearson Lehman, which was a great firm back then. Started on a Monday. After about a year, I realized how much I hated my life. And my mom said, come work for me. I know you don't want to do this, but I know you want to open up your own financial services, you know, company. I'll teach you how to do it. And the funniest part about that story is I said, no, you're my mother. I can't go work for you. And then she wrote me a great deal. She said, okay, I'll up your salary to $18,500 a year, right? Which back then was, terrible money, like same as it is now, but it's okay. And I'll give you medical benefits. And I thought, well, heck, that's a pretty good deal. So I took it. I've never looked back. I've worked every job in this industry. My mom has since retired. She ended up being the entrepreneur of the year from Ernst & Young here in this area. I learned everything from her, and I moved on forward. That's how I got started.
I love it.
Like many, we just fell into the industry.
You may be the first one I've interviewed out of, I don't know, 30 plus executives in our industry where it was actually your mom who was your champion and got you your start. I know Jamie Delsing from Consultus, I believe it was her grandfather who was part of starting Interim. And I can't think of anyone on the mom front. So this is fantastic. And I love your point about, I felt like I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And little do we know sometimes, but you have to go down those paths to know what's right and not. And I'm so happy that you tried it, because when coming back, you clearly knew that this was what you were meant to be doing. So you have 6 company brands. There's often a debate that we hear with companies, and even to this day, we're working with a couple of clients talking about whether or not they should have companies under one umbrella or not. We had that same debate back when I was with Interim and then Spherion. Do you have separate brands, not separate brands? And you know, they often think it really just depends on how they're looking to grow and scale. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, I'd love to hear it, because I know listeners will benefit from hearing your perspective on why you decided to start starting new companies versus expanding into, like you could have said, top staffing on, you know, the accounting side or whatever it may be. Tell us a little bit about why you made the decisions that you did with the growth of your company and the different brands, and how that has helped and benefited you.
Sure. So like all great decisions, it started with a massive failure. So we wanted to, as me and my current partner, who is my older brother, David, right? We wanted a trunk full of dollars instead of a truck full of dimes. And light industrial in the state of Pennsylvania is at best challenging and expensive. We wanted to break out, and we really had our heart set on technical stuff. We had our heart set on engineering eventually. So David and I launched the TOPS Staffing Technical Services Division, which sounds great, right? Had real pretty cars. They were all professional. They looked great. We were so well known and well trusted in our market that we did extremely well with our current clients. Couldn't break out of our current client base, save our life. We were known as a light industrial company. Everybody said, well, yeah, you know, you're great with LI, but how about engineering? It's a whole different world. Well, with our current clients, we did real well. We placed some people. We were able to expand, but it really just fell on its ear. And one day, we thought, you know what? Let's rebrand. So we started looking for someone to rebrand, right, and kind of mold around. At the time, I was involved in the American Staffing Association. My brother David was involved in the National Technical Service Association. If any of you remember that, they ended up going bankrupt and absorbed by ASA. However, we found a guy through there that we really, really liked. David spent over a year pursuing him. And then we thought, you know, it'd be a cool idea if we marry the logo. So if any of you look at any of our logos, they're all the same picture, which is a triangle, which is actually the point, which is in Point State Park, which is downtown in the city of Pittsburgh. There's this beautiful park in the middle of Pittsburgh, and it has this gorgeous fountain. So if you look at my logo closely, you'll see that that's the Fountain of Pittsburgh. They all have different names. They all represent different colors, and they represent different brands. But first, we launched Alltech. So we called it Alltech simply for that. We had the expertise of TOPS, but we had the specialty of Alltech. And we grew, oh my gosh, we grew over 400% 4 years in a row. I mean, doing that 1 year is easy, right? You go from 5 to 10, 10 to 20.
Right.
Going from 50 to 100 isn't the easiest thing in the whole world, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, that's unbelievable.
So successful. It was crazy. It was so successful, and that was in 2002. So we thought, hey, why not? Let's do this again, right? So 2006 rolls around. My brother has 2 little ones at home. I'm pregnant as a house. We run into another guy that we think, hey, this could be great. Coincidentally, we figure out that we have a guy in-house that can run the other brand. And I remember sitting across from David, and literally, I'm 7 months pregnant, and said, you know what, let's just do it, because if one makes it and one fails, I'm still okay with this. I think it's the right thing to do. It's going to be a crazy year, but let's just do it. And we did. Both enjoyed the same success. So at this point, we know this works, right? you have an infrastructure of having an established name. You have an infrastructure of an established brand. Your back office is expanding at the size, at the speed of light. Then all of a sudden you have quote unquote experts in the accounting industry. And we birthed account staff, and we have e-staff consulting, and they're experts in the IT field. And that way my clients can call and say, hey, Suze, I really need a mechanical engineer. And I can say, hey, let me get you over to Alltech. That's all they do. Hey, Suze, I really need a staff accountant. I'll say, hey, you know what? Let me give you to my guys at account staff, because that's all they do. And we found that we were able to control our numbers a lot better as well. LI had some real restrictions on it. I guess the most common variable in light industrial is, okay, we want to mark up. Well, we don't want to live by markups anymore. We wanted to live by margin. So pay rates, bill rates kind of went away, and we started growing by margin instead of, hey, I need 40 people at a 150. And we were squeezing margins back then, right? Everybody remembers 08. Most of us didn't sleep for that, year. But once we got through it, we realized that clients had squeezed us pretty hard. And 99% of all the contract to hire terms were 90 days in LI. I get 6 months with all my executive brands. So it behooves me significantly to break those apart and allow each brand to expand organically and to do it on their own.
Right.
And the only one I forgot was in 08, because we broke Sterling Office Professionals out of Tops, and that's the fifth major brand.
Okay. That's super helpful. Thank you for that. It definitely makes a lot of sense when you think about just even terminology or the way in which people buy. And something that you said that really stood out to me was, that's all they do.
Yeah.
So, you're an expert in it. That's all you do. So you're going to get an expert in that space. So, well, great. It's good to hear the debate on both sides, because we often hear it and are in the middle of it on the branding conversation. So I appreciate your feedback on that. So, Susie, when I first met you, you said something, and again, this is an Executive Women in Recruitment podcast, but you said something that really resonated with me, and I'm just going to quote this for those listening. I never looked around a boardroom and counted the number of men versus the number of women. I wasn't put in the position because I'm a woman. Susie, you are an extremely strong leader, and I know I haven't known you that long, but I know we met actually because I had asked Sean Malley, who I've known for years throughout the industry, is now with Sense, who he had said to me, hey, how are things going? We were catching up. And I said, hey, who would you suggest for our podcast? And he said, without hesitation, your name came up. And within minutes, he had sent me an email introduction. Your philosophy is one that I hope as a society we can embrace during my time in this lifetime, which is the state of equality. You don't see man or woman. You simply see the person for who they are and the talent they bring to the table. That is not the norm. Tell us more about the why behind your view and how you believe we can get more people to think the same way.
Gosh, I wish we could, because as an industry, we're supposed to be choosing people from resumes. Well, what if there wasn't a name on the resume? How would you know it was a man or a woman? How would you know if they were black or white or Hispanic or purple or yellow? You wouldn't, right? You should be just looking for that. And they're so, it drives me crazy. I hope that people don't look at me and just see a woman, because that's not all I am. I mean, people are complex by nature, but for God's sakes, that's not all I am. And I think it happens all the time. I wish people wouldn't do it in politics, because it drives me crazy. It's like, why are you picking that candidate? Well, it's because they're this or that. Shouldn't you be picking from a resume? Don't we know better than to pick from a resume? Isn't that what we do? You should be looking at every person for every position from a resume. Everything from your personal life to your professional life to politics to restaurants, right? People forget how complex human beings are, right? I mean, we're married and I'm happily married and I love my husband, but I could list the things that I agree with him on, and I got just as equal long of a list of things I don't agree with him on. We're just complex human beings. And to see someone at such a rudimentary level as saying they're just a woman or just a man, and that's the first thing that defines them, that is not the first thing that defines me. That's not the 10th thing that defines me. Might be the 20th thing that defines me, but that's it. And I really do wish others would see things that way, whether it's you're hiring a recruiter or you're picking a president or you're trying to find a fish. Do you look at a fish in a fish tank and say, hey, I wonder if that's a female fish or a male fish? You don't do that. But we do it with humans every day. It's ridiculous. I'm not any more qualified for a position because I'm a woman, and I'm sure not less qualified because I'm a woman. It doesn't make any difference to me. And I just don't see things that way.
Well, I love that you don't. And like I said, hopefully that will help us as we continue to strive for equality. And I do believe I'm a big, big proponent. We talked a little bit about your mom and generations and in an industry. I do believe that it takes generations to make change. And I know we'll talk about this in a little bit about your family and kind of work-life balance and so forth. But starting at the home, the more we can educate our children and those surrounding us, the more likely we are to take that on to other generations, which leads me to my next story with you. I think this was the second story you told me. It was about a woman interviewing for a recruiter job, and she asked you, she said, you're a woman in business. I know there are barriers. How do you get around it? So I'd love for you to share the story and your response and the lesson you were trying to share with this up and comer, why it was so important for you to kind of have that radical candor or see it, say it moment with her.
I scared this young girl to death. That was the first question out of her mouth. And that to me is very telling. If I'm in an interview with somebody and that's the first question out of your mouth, you missed the last 2 hours that I just spent asking you questions, right? And I said to her, I said, is that how you see me? And she said, well, yes, you're a very, very strong and commanding woman in business. I'm like, listen, you're just missing. You're missing. If that's all you see me as, you have missed the last couple hours. If you define yourself as nothing but a woman, then people will see you as that. And you don't want that to be the first thing. You want the professional, what you bring to the table, how you're going to help the company, how you're going to beat everybody else in the room. And I mean everybody else in the room. You don't want to just beat the women in the room. You want to beat everybody in the room. So if there's 20 recruiters, and everybody is competing for margin, you want your name at the top. And you don't get there by just saying, well, it's okay if I don't beat everybody. I just want to be a woman in business, or I just want to beat that woman. I'm like, that's just not how you get anywhere. You can't look at those minute details. You have to focus on the curve. You have to look at your goal. And if your goal is to be the top of the recruiting pool, don't worry about who's below that. Just get to that. And she was surprised. I went on a rant, and this poor girl.
Well, there will be a day, and maybe it is that day, but we'll at some point where she will be extraordinarily thankful to. When you and I were talking, I had mentioned I remember never thinking about being the only woman in a room early on in my career, and a lot of it was because I happened to work for a very diverse company. I do remember being at least, 10 years younger. So for me, it was more on the age front, not necessarily the fact that I was a woman. But I do believe, again, talking back to kind of youth and women and confidence issues and challenges, and we know a lot of times it stems from when people are in a very young age. And I think about that and I think, you're not born necessarily thinking that way. It's often society or other people putting that in your head. And there's a term I love called the evil DJ, and it's basically just where you continue to play that negative soundtrack over and over, and that you are in control to not have that be the case. And the more you can walk in and just, like you said, be confident as the person and the professional you're walking in as, that's what should stand out the most, not that you're a man or a woman. You're just the best at what you do.
You're 100% right. And the concept I think we're looking for here is socialization. So I grew up in a household where I was not defined as being a woman or a man, period. And again, my mom was a stay-at-home mom for 16 years. Okay. So she kind of played that traditional role. Then she goes out of that and, she goes back to work. Within 5 years, she's running the most successful staffing agency in the city, right? She's killing it. Never went to a day of college, never had the opportunity to go to college, went to high school, never got a B, mind you, which she tells me with some frequency. However, got out of high school, got a job, went straight to work and was successful, but nothing like the success she saw when she started the staffing business. She never looked at that and said, hey, I'm just a stay-at-home mom. I never looked at her that way, and she sure never looked at me that way. She never looked at me any differently than she looked at my brother David, and we're still in business today.
I would say one of the things that I had read about you, well, first of all, you mentioned during our initial conversation that you're very private by nature. And I have to say, when I was doing background research, I tried my best to find you. I like to think I'm pretty good at researching things. And I knew based on our conversation that there were all these associations and groups you're part of. I did manage to find you on the SIA Global Women and Staffing 100 list. So congratulations. I know there's a lot more out there about you, but it just was interesting to me in our industry, especially today when everything is so social media driven and, you know, LinkedIn, and we manage a lot of executive profiles. So of course I'm out there trying to find you and read all about you. So tell us all about your philosophy in an industry that is so heavily reliant on tools like LinkedIn. How do you successfully get away with avoiding the public eye as far as what we can find out about you? And why did you, if you did make that decision, why did you make that decision to do so?
You know what? It's more of a value proposition for me. So I am very private by nature. Anybody that knows me knows that I have, you know, I have the whole Modern Family thing going, right? I'm remarried to my second husband. He's got two natural kids. I got two natural kids. We got the Brady Bunch together. I got a chaos of four kids all over the place, and three of which are currently in high school, one's in middle school. It's like my life is chaos, right? It's a hot mess. And I don't let any of them on social media or anything, so that's just part of what I show them as a parent. But for me, it's just I don't value it. Like, I wouldn't get on the internet and find, and everybody who gets on the internet and looks for people and finds LinkedIn profiles and stuff, half the time they're updated, a lot of times they're not. So I don't really bother with stuff like that. I think if I'm going to get in front of somebody, I'm going to talk to them. I travel a lot. I see a lot of people. I go to conventions. I participate. I'm active, very active in my industry. So I think that that's just a much more effective tool. I have people that walk up to me at a convention or like a staffing law and say, hey, we met in, I don't know, Vegas or whatever. I'm like, how do you remember that? But I just think that that's a much more valuable tool than seeing someone on the internet.
Yeah, it goes along with, it sounds like, just your overall philosophy on the relationship building and the strengths that you bring to the table. And I know we had talked about how active you are and that you're a big believer in being involved in the industry. So it's not like you're private and don't put yourself out there. You certainly are a successful business person and are actively involved in the industry. Of course, you're a past chairman of the, and you actually started the Western chapter of the Pennsylvania Staffing Association, which is an ASA affiliated chapter, and you're a past chairman of ASA as well. And with the Pennsylvania chapter and the association, you're president there for 3 years. So again, you're definitely obviously putting yourself out there, and your clients and your employees all know who you are and so forth. I find it interesting when it comes to our association. So just to shift gears for a minute, and you are active, you started a chapter, you've been the chairperson at ASA, very active in the industry. We run into a lot of companies who refuse to be involved in our industry. And obviously we specialize in our industry, and sometimes people want to work with agencies who don't come from the industry just to get a varied perspective. This is a little bit different. This is, well, why would I put myself out there and be amongst our competitors? Or I want to learn from people who are outside of our industry because, you know, they'll bring a unique frame of thought to the table. So I would love to hear your perspective about getting involved and being active in the industry. And I heard you talk on this very topic. Scott Winthrop had a podcast with you on it. And what message do you have for those business owners and executives who are adamant and say, I will not get involved in associations and I do not need to get involved in those different groups? How has it helped your company, and I guess you even personally? And then for your companies, do you encourage them to participate throughout the company? So is it just at the executive level, or do you encourage that throughout the entire organization?
Absolutely, without question, the entire organization. I am invested in this industry. This industry has given me everything I've had. I would still be at 10 million if I wasn't involved in ASA, but I'm not. I never want to be small. And the majority of agencies have to think bigger, and you think bigger by being around people that are bigger and being around better brains, heavier thinkers, more strategic people, and that's where you find them. Is it like an ASA or a staffing law conference or even an FIA? You know what I mean? If you don't get involved in your industry, you're not invested in it. It's just always going to be small. I don't want to be small. I never did. So I always wanted to swim in the big pond, not the little pond, right? And it's hugely important. You know, I require that every person in my building gets employment law certified through ASA. And a lot of times if they need help, I'll even go into a conference room and teach a class or that kind of stuff. But if they're not invested in the industry enough to learn that kind of stuff, I mean, are they really going to last a long time here? Is that really going to happen? I don't think so. But, I mean, there are certain things that have happened in this industry that, like, okay, the Affordable Care Act. I don't know that I would have gotten through that if I wasn't sitting in rooms with general counsels of ADECO and that kind of stuff, figuring out how the hell I was going to handle that here, right? How was I going to handle that? We were going from a small employer to a large employer overnight. How was I going to do that? It was seamless because I had so much expertise around me. I've gotten more out of ASA than I've ever given. I mean, every time I help people, I feel better about it. Every time I make a bad operator a good operator, I know I'm helping the industry and in turn helping everybody.
Okay, so you are taking on another new role. So let's talk about that for a minute. You're on track to double revenue in 2 years, even at the large size that you are. You just told us you're extremely involved in our industry. And you mentioned earlier, you have a family and you have children. But you also mentioned to me that you love organized chaos. You must have some sort of system, Susie, that keeps you sane with how much you have going on. Do you have anything? I like to call it my top three refuse to compromise items, but what do you do when it comes to finding quote unquote balance or integration, the whole work life? You and I were emailing yesterday on a Sunday and we're like, well, that's life for the entrepreneur and we love it and we would never change it. But whether it's self-care or giving yourself permission to be present or leave for something, what is it? What's your process for this?
I want to do two things. Again, I have four kids. I have two naturals, two steps. So I have the whole crazy Brady Bunch thing, right? And if my kids come back with two things, I want them to see how hard I work, and they do. And I want them to see I walk away from it if they need me or if I have to be at something. I am leaving here. It is 3:37 right now. We're finishing this up at 4. I'm leaving at 4:45 to go to Joey's baseball game. And I won't stay here because I have to be at Joey's baseball game. Even if that means I get him home tonight from ball, and he usually plays center field or he'll play shortstop, right? And I got a really good baseball player. And he found what he liked to do young, and it's important to him, and therefore it's important to me. So regardless of what's happening here, I will go. I will be present. I won't take phone calls the whole time I'm there. I just don't. Maybe one or two, but I don't sit on telephone. I go, I watch him, I comment on his play, I correct his swing, right, if I have to. And then when I get home tonight, I'll pick the phone back up and I'll finish up. And sometimes that's late for me. And sometimes that's 11 o'clock for me or whatever, but I'll be ready for the morning when I come in. But if you don't, if my kids don't think that I'm there for them, and this is just a good example because this is happening in an hour and 15 minutes, then I'm not succeeding as a parent, right? Not mother, not father, not gender related again, just as a parent, because I'm the one that corrects the baseball swing if he's got his elbow too high, right? And I have to be there to do that.
I do believe when you feel whole, we're not perfect every day, and you know, thankfully people don't always, at least in my world, expect me to be perfect every day. I'm probably harder on myself than anyone else is, but we're not perfect. And as long as we're doing the best that we can, and like you said, being present in the moments that really matter, that is clutch in life. And that's what your children, all four of them, will walk away remembering: the hard work and that you were present, which is a gift a lot of children do not have. But again, it's that philosophy. And I love the parent piece, and don't make an assumption on which parent's going to be the one coaching on baseball. We have Michelle Career on our team, coaches her son's football team, and she was the first mom, quote unquote, parent, female parent, to actually do the coaching on one of the football teams. So, you know, we have to keep all of that in mind. So anyway, thank you for sharing that story. So, Susie, I could talk to you forever. I know we covered a lot of ground and there were other things we were going to cover. You've got a baseball game to get to. So I'm going to ask you one final question. If you wouldn't mind sharing the best piece of advice you've ever been given, whether personal or professional.
Oh, my gosh, that's a snap. Oh, and this relates directly to our topic, too. So that's perfect. So I was in the middle of a really expensive, messy divorce because with my first husband, he was a newspaper editor and I owned all these businesses, right? I'd seen some success, so it was getting a little hot and heavy. It got a little ugly. And I sat down with a family friend who I've known for many, many, many years. He said to me, I'll never forget this because I've applied this to my life and professional life and personal life so many times, focus on the curve. And I think, you know, I said, well, what does that mean? And he said, picture yourself on a bicycle and you're coming around a curve and you're going the whole way around that curve. There's rocks everywhere in the road. Rocks everywhere. Don't look at any rock. Just focus on getting through that curve and getting to the end and finish that race. And I thought, my God, that's so profound. He was so right. There are so many rocks in the road. Whether those rocks in the road are 20 recruiters in a room and you're trying to get to the top of that heap, or you're trying to get through a divorce and you're just trying to get to the end, or you're trying to double your business in the next couple of years. Who cares about the rocks? I don't care what the rocks look like. I don't care if the rocks are men, women, black, white, purple, green, fish. I don't care what the rocks are. I'm just going to focus on the curve. I'm going to get to the end. I'm going to win the race, right?
It makes a lot of sense. And my team will probably hear me say that all the time now. I end up being able to quote so many wonderful things from these podcasts, but you're right, just to focus on the curve. My stepmom used to say they're just obstacles. You need to stop looking at those obstacles and focus on that end result and not worry so much about all those little things that keep popping up in front of you. So I love your analogy of just looking around the curve. There's rocks everywhere. There always are. And the more we focus on those, the less we can focus on that end result. So, oh my gosh, yep. Susie, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, listen, I know you're private. You're not all over social media. However, people may want to get in touch with you. What's the best way they can reach you?
You know what? Anybody can call me for any reason. And I'll give you my direct dial. Please publish it. Everybody has it anyway. And I'll give you my email. And anybody who wants to reach out and discuss anything or talk about anything that we've discussed today or anything else that I can help you with. I'm all over the ASA boards, too. You see me pipe in on compensation systems and all kinds of stuff like that. But my direct dial is 412-701-9001. My email is Susan@AllTechStaffing, and everybody don't say Susie. And I know I go by Susie, but 25 years ago I made it Susan, and it's Susan now. So Susan, I know, @AllTechStaffing, staffing.com. And again, if you need me, anybody can find me on the ASA boards or ASA Central or anything like that too.
Thank you so much for joining us today on The Edge, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Yes, ma'am. Nice talking to you. Thanks for everything. And I'll be around if anybody needs me. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum@clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.